Welcome back for the third hour of Issues Etc. Start out with the phone numbers because it's open lines, and as I mentioned early in the program, due to a little trouble we're having with the phone system here, we've been having it for quite some time here, we were not able during the time we had phone guests to take phone calls from our listeners. Now we are, because you become the phone guest. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. We started out today talking with Dr. Ken Sherb about the person and work of the Holy Spirit. And I mentioned during that hour that if you had questions or comments regarding that conversation or anything regarding the person and work of the Holy Spirit, you should feel free to call during this hour. So do. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. There are stories in the news I'd like your reaction to. First of all, the question that has been hanging in the air in the Senate has been answered. The Democrats will, at least they say they will, according to the Associated Press, filibuster the nomination of Miguel Estrada, at least his confirmation. He's been nominated. No one can change that. But the Senate, rather than have him confirmed by a yes or no vote, will, under the leadership of the Democrats, they're not in the leadership, but they will be leading the filibuster, will stretch out debate, hoping to squelch his confirmation entirely. The story comes from the Associated Press, and the question I have for you after this, I'm done with the story here, is this fair? I have heard people on television, on radio today, decrying the fact that the Democrats are going to filibuster this confirmation. The president himself says that this is shameful politics. But would you expect, if this were not a pro-life judge, but in fact, a pro-choice judge, would you expect the pro-life faction of the Senate to do the same, to filibuster the confirmation? What I'm hearing from conservatives and pro-lifers is, well, this is dirty politics, as though they would say, we would never do this. But wouldn't you expect them to do this, rather than have a pro-choice judge confirmed to the second highest court in the land? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. They've been counting votes. Here's the story. Senate Democrats say they will filibuster Washington lawyer Miguel Estrada's confirmation to the federal appeals bench because he stonewalled them last year when they inquired about his judicial philosophy. President Bush on Tuesday called the Democratic plan to block his most favored judicial nominee, quote, shameful politics, as the Republican and Democratic parties started a high-stakes tug-of-war over a man who could be the first Hispanic on the U.S. Court of Appeals for the District of Columbia, and that being the second highest court in the land, could also be ready to take a slot if there's a vacancy on the Supreme Court. Estrada is a member. Now, this is a little tidbit I had not heard. Maybe you had, but I had not heard this about Estrada. Estrada was a member of the law firm that represented George W. Bush in his successful Supreme Court fight for the presidency. Remember 2002? Remember how it took, how long did it take? Months to get a president after the election? Estrada was a member of the law firm. Maybe that has something to do with it, too. He came to the United States from Honduras as a teenager and graduated from Harvard Law School in 1986. He has practiced constitutional law and argued about 15 cases before the Supreme Court. So this guy is no slouch. Senate Democratic leader Tom Daschle of South Dakota accused Estrada of refusing to explain what his judicial philosophy would be if he became a federal judge. The D.C. Circuit, which is evenly split between judges appointed by Republican and Democratic presidents, has been a stepping stone to the U.S. Supreme Court. Now, the subtext here, of course, is abortion. Whether or not he will come clean as to which side he will vote on issues of abortion. And remember, an even split between Republican and Democrats on any judicial bench does not necessarily mean an even split between pro-life and pro-choice. Far from it. Every nominee who comes before the Senate has the obligation to be forthcoming with information about his position, with information about his record, said Daschle. Until he does, we do not believe that it is in the Senate's best interest to allow this confirmation to go forward. Now, the Senate's parliamentary rules allow the minority to use a filibuster to effectively reject a measure or nominee with just 41 votes. The Senate has 51 Republicans, 48 Democrats, and one independent, they found enough votes to support their position, said Daschle. Bush and Estrada's nomination, he said Estrada's nomination would not be held up any longer. The Senate has already debated his qualifications for more than a week. Quote, Miguel Estrada is highly qualified, extremely intelligent. He has the votes necessary to be confirmed. Yet a handful of Democrats in the Senate are playing politics with his nomination, and it's shameful politics. Herein lies the question for you. I want your answer to this question. Do you agree with the president? This is the kind of shameful politics that we would never do. The pro-lifers would never do that. This is the kind of thing pro-choicers in the Senate do. We, the pro-lifers, would never do such a thing, filibuster a nominee. Or will you be honest enough to admit that you would expect a pro-life senator, in the minority, if that were the case, to filibuster and perhaps squelch the confirmation of a nominee if they were pro-choice, especially to the second highest court in the land? Where do you fall on this? The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. That's one question. Here's another one. I read about this about a week ago, then I found it again in the AP. E-tithing catching on in some denominations. Here's the story. In an era when about 60% of Americans get their paychecks through direct deposit, and half of U.S. households pay at least one bill electronically, some religious leaders see e-tithing as a logical next step. It works like this. Maybe you've even done this. Members fill out a form providing a bank or a savings account number and the amount that they want the church to withdraw weekly, semi-monthly, or monthly. From the United Methodist Church to the Roman Catholic Diocese, several large religious denominations are testing the method. Some are even allowing members to give by credit card. Now, this wouldn't debit your checking account or your savings account. This would be money you're borrowing to give to the church. But there are dissenting views suggesting that e-tithing sells out the idea of taking a gift to God. Jack Wilkerson, the Southern Baptist Convention's vice president for business and finance, says it's a way to be out of sight and out of mind. He says mainline denominations are using it today because they're looking for any way to prop up sagging giving. Now, sagging giving is an understatement. I talked a couple days ago with someone from the Presbyterian Church USA. He talked about the unbelievable number of budget cuts that have come down in that largest of the Presbyterian denominations in the U.S. The same is true of my own denomination. Sagging giving is an understatement. Is the answer e-tithing? Simply fill out a form at the beginning of the year, give them your routing number, give them your checking account number, maybe even give them your credit card number, and let them do the rest. They'll take out no more than you ask, and they'll take it out on a regular basis. You can budget for it. And if you want to, you can even put it on your MasterCard or your Visa and go into debt for it and pay the 21%. I want your answer. Do you think it's a good idea to adopt e-tithing in the church? That is, electronic transfer of funds in order to, rather than putting the check or the money in the offering plate. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Your answer to that question. And while you're thinking about that, think about this. Did you hear this story yesterday? It broke late in the day. It was all over the news this morning. Apparently, a tiny little satellite, I think it's about 1 million miles from the Earth, called WMAP. That's not the name of the satellite. That's the name of the project under which the satellite was deployed. Apparently has captured the best picture ever of the infant universe. Now, of course, when we talk infant universe here, we're speaking, of course, we're going to concede for a moment, just for the sake of argument, that the universe is very, very old. I don't happen to believe this for a second. But they say that according to the mapping data from this little satellite that is looking, well, in essence, back in time, because it's looking so far away in the universe, it is able to see the nascent universe merely hundreds of thousands of years after what scientists call the Big Bang. The image is so detailed that scientists said it answers one of the most important questions about the cosmos, including when it was born and how it will die. Did you hear this story? The image, created from a year's worth of data collected by a NASA probe 1 million miles from Earth, has solved the long-standing puzzles such as what the universe looked like right after it was forged in the violent inferno of the Big Bang, when stars first blinked in on the coalescing heavens, and what kind of matter makes up the expanding universe that exists today. Astronomers calculate that the universe, according to this data, they now have, they say, the most accurate and definitive. Yesterday in the news reports I heard, they were talking about unequivocal answers to questions. They say the universe is about 13.7 billion years old, that the first stars lighted up about 200 million years after the cosmos was born, and that it will expand forever, thinning and cooling until it eventually reaches nothingness. In other words, it will just evaporate, sooner or later. Much, much later, actually. These results are truly profound and give us insights into some of the most fundamental questions that humans have ever posed, said Edward Wheeler, NASA's Associate Administrator for Space Science. The image was created from the most sensitive temperature measurements ever made of a faint glow that is dissipating through space. It's often called the afterglow of the Big Bang, the last remaining light from the blinding flare of the Big Bang. By detecting subtle variations in the glow's warmth, scientists were able to discern the primordial structure of the universe a mere 380,000 years after its birth, and in cosmic time, according to the timetables they are operating with, that is very early. From that, scientists calculated even further back in time to determine the conditions that must have existed at the time of the cosmological conception. They also extrapolated forward to measure the matter that makes up the universe today, and from that predicted what it will do in the future. Now, these are amazing statements, but scientists are wont often to make statements like this, and then about a year and a half later have to retract them. Here's one. I think every astronomer will remember where they were when they heard these results, said John Bacall, a leading astrophysicist from Princeton University. I certainly will, he said. This announcement represents a rite of passage for cosmology, from speculation to precision science. I am thrilled by the results. Now we're doing precision science. Before, we were just guessing. By the way, you might want to tell your kids that when they get home, that everything in the textbook was just guessing. The next edition of the textbooks will have the precision science that we've all been looking for. Now, what actually happened is they measured the background radiation of the universe, and of course they probably did measure it very accurately. But then they employed computer models in order to figure out which model best fit the data that they had gathered over 18 months. And lo and behold, to everyone's surprise, not the least of which mine, the model that they found for the universe that fit their data was the model that they were using. In this universe, by the way, most of the universe is made up of what's called dark energy, which no one can tell you what it is, but they can tell you that it must counteract the forces of gravity, because otherwise the universe would be falling back in on itself. So there must be something called dark energy. We can't see it. We can't detect it. We just know it's there because gravity doesn't seem to be counteracting the expansion of the universe. Now, I know this is all very confusing, and most of us don't have time to sit there and wonder what the universe looks like or how old it is, but there are people who get paid good money to worry about this very thing. I find it interesting that the very thing that they had accepted that they had accepted as the best model turned out to be the model that was proven by their data. But as in all scientific discoveries of late, it seems, this needs to be taken tentatively. Because who knows, the little satellite is scheduled to be out there for 3 more years, and maybe in 2 more years, they might have to revise these definitive statements about the age of the universe and whatnot. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. What do you think about e-tithing? Do you do it? Would you do it if your pastor came on a Sunday morning and announced to the congregation, folks, we'll keep the offering plate for those of you who don't want to get with it. But now that we all exist in the 21st century and we live in the age of the internet and of electronic transfer, we're going to do here at this congregation what we should have been doing all along, and that is just fill out this form this morning before you leave. The elders will hand you the... All we need is your checking account number, your routing number, or your credit card number. You tell us how much you want withdrawn every week, every 2 weeks, or every month. And you will no longer have to worry about the offering plate. You can e-tithe. How would you respond? Would you use it, this if this were an option for you? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Do you see any downside to this? For heaven's sakes, I get my paycheck via electronic transfer. I'm glad I do. I actually get the paycheck before payday sometimes. I'm able to, I don't have to worry about going to the bank. I pay some bills, not all bills. I'm kind of an interesting mix. Some bills I actually walk into the place and pay them in person. The old-fashioned way, the way grandma and grandpa used to. But others I pay via the internet. Or via the telephone. It just depends on what I have time for. Giving to your congregation, should it be just like paying the bills? Just like getting a direct withdrawal from your checking account? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Up first, Herman is calling from Illinois. Herman, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Yeah, thank you for taking my call regarding Dr. Montgomery's discussion last hour about writing styles. I have an acquaintance of mine who is working in an academic field who writes superb articles on historical subjects, and I followed them, and one that he wrote came out with his name on it, but it was so totally different and poorly done that I was motivated to take the telephone and ask him if he really did it. And he said yes, because the deadline of the magazine got compressed and he didn't have time to do a thorough job as he might like. And so, but he was the same person that did both radically different styles of writing. And it's curious when you get into that, they take the issue of Isaiah and what are supposedly the four different views of God there, yet in the New Testament you'll see that the whole of Isaiah, from all the chapters practically, are quoted in the Gospels and the New Testament in service of the testimony of Christ.
I think you make a good point there. That is the point, if those who were not listening may have heard, that often historical criticism, this kind of skeptical view of the veracity of Holy Scripture, takes the Scriptures apart, saying that there must have been various authors because, like in the case of the Old Testament, they'll say, well, there was a Yahwehist, a person who referred to God as Yahweh. Then there was a Eloheist, a person who referred to God as Elohim. And all these and then there are a couple others, there was a priestly, a person who had a priestly emphasis in their style, and there was a person who had, it was J-E-D-P. What's D? Oh, a Deuteronomist, I believe.
J-E-D-P,
yes.
I believe.
And this is the theory that they've operated with, the historical critics. And they say they've got different authors at work in the same book. Now, the interesting thing is sometimes the names are piled up on top of one another, like Yahweh and Elohim are piled up on top of one another there. And then they've got to sort out, someone must have been doing some redacting and sewing this together, making it look like one document. The amazing thing is, at least this is what I realized in kind of my simpleton's way of thinking about it in my seminary days, is in order to get a coherent scriptures, their theory required more footwork, more trouble, more going back over the thing, more basically duplicity and redrafting and things like this to make it almost humanly impossible to produce the thing as we have it today. It seems more reasonable to believe in divine inspiration.
Yes, they start erecting a huge theory structure that it in itself becomes then in their work the subject of the scripture rather than the scripture itself.
That's a very good observation. Herman, thank you so much for the call. Heck, I wouldn't, if you took what I wrote, I've got a bunch of writings in my computer. If you took what I wrote 2 years ago as opposed to what I write today, you would not believe it was the same person. Why? Because I've been doing radio for about 3 years. And it's made me come to the point a lot quicker. It's made me make my sentences, I know you wouldn't believe this, but my sentences are actually shorter. My preaching is very different, quite different than it was when I was in the parish. If you were to listen to one sermon and the other sermon delivered in the same voice, you might not even believe they came from the same person. But they do. Michael is calling from Pittsburgh, listening on the internet. Michael, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hello.
Hi, Michael.
Yeah, I got two comments. On the first one, on the filibusterings of the people filibustering Bush's nomination, and you asked, would one support a pro-lifer filibustering a pro-choice nominee?
Yeah.
I would say, yeah, I would expect them to do that. And I would applaud the pro-life person to filibuster a pro-choice nominee.
So then, other than the possible outcome, you really don't have a problem with a pro-choice minority in the Senate filibustering Estrada's nomination, because you'd expect the same from pro-life senators.
Yes.
All right. And the other thing you wanted to talk about?
Yeah, you were asking about the e-tithing.
Sure.
My opinion on that is, if you were saying take out weekly, bi-weekly, or monthly,
mm-hmm.
Well, sometimes people have things where something comes along and they thought they would have money and an emergency comes along and they don't have the money, and what happens when that comes along and the tithe comes out and there's no money in there? That would create more of a problem, in my opinion.
That's a good issue to raise, because cash flow, that's what they call it, cash flow is an issue for a lot of people. Michael, thank you for listening on the internet in Pittsburgh, and thank you for giving us a call. Now, would that be a concern of yours, folks? That if you signed off on a form that would allow the church, through e-tithing, to withdraw money from your account, maybe you're one of those persons that never runs low. You're not like me, then. Maybe you're one of those persons who always has a bunch of extra money in the bank. And so whether or not you had less or more at any given point in the year wouldn't make much difference. They're never going to draw you out. They're never going to overdraw your account. But most people do worry about cash flow various times of the year. Oh, just think about the holiday season, where people go out and spend a lot of money in November and December, and then, well, it was actually spent in November and December, but they actually start paying for things, if they're using their credit cards, in February and March and April and on through the next of the year. There are a lot of people who spend the whole year paying off what they spent in those 2 months on gifts. They pay it off little by little, and they get it taken care of, and then it's time to do it again. Now, if that's a cash flow problem, would e-tithing be a problem for you? One might even argue that given the fact that that's how a lot of people do manage their finances, that people would say, well, no, I would put $100 a week here, but of course that's going to be hard to do in November and December, January, February, March. So I'll put 25. That way I know I can make it. And so the actual net result would be people giving less. What do you think? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. We're going to take a break here. When we come back, we'll go straight to the phones. Chris, be patient, and those who are waiting on the line, please be patient. Our phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. What do you think about e-tithing?
Contending for truth in an age of anti-truth. You're listening to Issues, Etc.
Hi, this is Todd Wilkin. I receive, review, and read a lot of books in preparation for the broadcast hours of Issues, Etc. Sad to say, some of what Christian publishing produces isn't worth reading, but some is. That's why we have the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month. Our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February is Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can order the book by calling Concordia Publishing House during regular business hours. 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Ask for our Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February, Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can also order the book online. Go to our Issues, Etc. website at issuesetc.org. Click on the What's New section, and there you'll find a link to Concordia Publishing House. The book, Testing the Claims of Church Growth. It's the Issues, Etc. Book of the Month for February. 1-800-325-3040.
A grave dug up for evolution.
Answers with Ken Ham, author of the new book, Walking Through Shadows. Well, Ken, this sounds, disgusting. Why would anyone dig up someone's grave in the name of evolution?
You know, it's a well-known fact of history that Darwin believed the Australian Aborigines were the missing links between humans and apes. But there's even more to the story. You see, after the first English governor came to Australia in 1788, he took a couple of Aboriginals back to England. Now, when these Aborigines arrived, an English newspaper reported the event this way, quote, "They appear to be a race totally incapable of civilization. They are from a lower order of the human race," end of quote. One of these Aborigines eventually died. Later, his body was dug up from its grave and stolen by Charles Darwin's grandfather. It was stuffed and exhibited at the Royal College of Surgeons. You see, Darwin's grandfather was also an evolutionist, and he obviously influenced his grandson with evolutionary ideas. No wonder Charles Darwin had such racist attitudes towards the Aborigines. Time and time again, the teaching of evolution has resulted in evil fruits. Remember, Hitler used evolution to justify his racist attitudes to the Jews. It's so important to tell people the truth about human origins. We're all one race, descended from our father Adam, so therefore we are all related.
Ken Ham has much more to share with you regarding the origin of the different people groups. In fact, his free booklet on this topic can be read on our website, AnswersRadio.com. All sorts of free information can be found there. It's at AnswersRadio.com.
:31 at AM 850 KFUO. Weather for St. Louis, mostly clear tonight, low of about 28. For Thursday, partly cloudy, high near 50, so a nice day on the way tomorrow. Right now, mostly clear, and 37 in St. Louis. Our last look at St. Louis traffic. Northbound 270 is stop and go from Dorset, headed for westbound 70. Eastbound 270 between McDonough Boulevard and Lindbergh, there's some slow traffic there. Westbound 44 at 270, slow traffic in the right lane. Westbound 40 between Clayton, Skinker, and Hanley, there's some slow traffic there. Also slow Brentwood to McKnight. Eastbound 40 between Jefferson and the Poplar Street Bridge, there's some slow traffic that way. And northbound 55 between Park Avenue and the Poplar Street Bridge, slow traffic in the right lane. That's traffic and weather on AM 850 KFUO. I'm Craig Allen. Next on Issues Etc., more open lines.
Did you know that your congregation can host a KFUO Sunday? A KFUO Sunday highlights the gospel outreach of AM 850 KFUO through preaching, teaching, and by providing you and your fellow parishioners with a personal connection to and information about KFUO. Next time you see your pastor, ask him to call and schedule a KFUO Sunday for your congregation. Call 1-800-844-0524 and ask for Pastor Todd Wilkin. You may have seen this week's cover story in Time Magazine, Solving the Mysteries of DNA, and you're curious. We're going to have a conversation tomorrow on the program with Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary here in St. Louis about genetic science. See if he can make some of this inexplicable more understandable to the average Joe person who doesn't have a lot of time to think about what's going on in his DNA. Also tomorrow, Pastor Bobby Brewer of Scottsdale Bible Church in Arizona, seven things you should know about UFOs. That is almost a rhyme. Seven things you should know about UFOs. A near rhyme, I should say. It's open lines for anything you want to talk about. Our call-in number, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Car phone callers, first-time callers, and internet callers get top priority. Calling from his car, Kennedy is on the line. Welcome to Issues Etc.
Hello?
Hello.
Yeah, I am going to be a church leader here in a couple of years. And I think that the e-tithing thing is a good idea, probably for a much younger generation. We have something at our church right now called the Simply Giving. I think that's from, I forgot where it's from, but anyway.
So you think the e-tithing is a good idea?
I think, I will make it an option. But the fact is that the counter at our church is a small group of itself. They have devotions regularly when they come together to count on Tuesdays. And I think it would be a bad thing to break up that group because everybody is e-tithing.
Okay, now, Kennedy, one question for you. Do you think there's a danger or a potential for the e-tithing to either be abused or, if not abuse, to cause some unforeseen trouble?
Well, there might be some electronic dangers. I don't necessarily see anything that was wrong with making it an option at a church theologically. But I would encourage people going the traditional route. But at the same time, until I form a theology that would discourage e-tithing, I think it's a good option for those who may want it.
All right, Kennedy, thank you so much for the call. What I'm wondering about is if you sign the paper and you've given your permission, your routing number and your checking account number, and they're going to be taking the money out every week or once every 2 weeks, you're laying there on Sunday morning. You're saying to yourself, well, the money's going to be there. Maybe I can stay home. Oh, maybe you wouldn't say that, but do you think some people would? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You know, we all know of the story of the parents who drop off the little girl for Bible school, and they put the check in her hand, then they drive away. The little girl goes to Sunday school, puts the check in the offering plate on her way downstairs, but the parents go home and go back to bed. Now, that does happen. What do the rest of you think about e-tithing? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Chris from South County, thanks for waiting and welcome to Issues Etc.
Hi, Pastor.
Hello.
Actually, I wanted to talk about filibustering.
Sure, go ahead.
I think that a lot of people would be in favor of that. It's silly to think of just because you're in the pro-life camp, you're not going to do everything you can for your issue. But I fully expect my senators and representatives to do that.
So the president says that this filibuster, or at least the promised filibuster of Estrada's nomination, who everyone knows is, he's pro-life, and that's what we're all talking about anyway.
Right.
The president says, and this is a quote, he says it's shameful politics. Would you, if you had the opportunity, say, Mr. President, I would engage in those kind of politics too if it were a pro-choice nominee?
Of course. It's perfectly legal, and I expect it. If you're that passionate about any issue, regardless if it's abortion or something else, you know, you want your elected representatives to fight for that.
Chris, thank you very much. There's another honest man. Okay, for those of you who may just be tuning in, the Democrats have said, at least they've given something of a pledge, that there will be a filibuster over the Estrada vote. And Estrada, of course, Miguel Estrada, has been nominated by the president for the second highest court in the land, the district court in D.C. He is pro-life, but he has been rather circumspect about his record and about his views when asked by the Senate in previous testimony. They've been debating this thing for a week. The question is whether or not the Democrats were going to filibuster it. They think they have enough votes. They only need 41 in the Senate to keep it going, and it could have the potential of squashing the nomination. The president has called it shameful politics. The whole quote reads as follows. Miguel Estrada is highly qualified, extremely intelligent. He has the votes necessary to be confirmed, yet a handful of Democrats in the Senate are playing politics with his nomination. It's shameful politics. And yet the Senate rules allow it. And would you, if the tables were turned, and this were President Bill Clinton, with a pro-choice nominee to the second highest court in the land, wouldn't you expect your Republican or Democrat pro-life senators to scour the Senate chamber for every vote and mount a filibuster to stop it? Especially if it were someone who, as Miguel Estrada is, apparently, a potential U.S. Supreme Court candidate. 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. And the caller was right. We're not talking about something that's illegal or unethical according to the Senate rules. It is provided for. It's a way that in the small deliberative body that the Senate is, it's a way that has been provided for the minority to bring a halt to any kind of action if they can mount 41 votes. What do you think? Amber's calling from St. Louis. Amber, welcome to Issues Etc.
Oh, hello.
Hello.
Well, in my view, that filibustering Miguel Estrada over his pro-life stance is actually just the same as one-issue voting. They're ignoring his qualifications, his views, and his work just because he's pro-life. That's the same thing that pro-life voters do when they ignore the candidate's other views on education, defense, in order to vote pro-life.
Now, are you speaking in favor of one-issue voting or against it?
I'm actually against one-issue voting. I think the democratic process is dependent on you taking in the whole qualifications of a person and their views.
Now, I'm not asking this question in order to impugn your credibility.
Mm-hmm.
I'm simply curious to see which side of the issue you fall upon. Are you pro-life or pro-choice?
I am actually pro-life.
All right. As a pro-lifer, would you want your Senate, let's say that this was the tables were turned,
mm-hmm.
and this were a pro-choice nominee, would you want your senators to mount a filibuster against such a nomination and a confirmation?
I would actually ask my Senate, I would actually look at the qualifications. I mean, there's more to a person than their view on abortion. I mean, even the issue of abortion, you know, once the child's born, education, health care, those are other very important issues to that child. And with a pro-choice nominee, I want to know what their views on those other issues. Because one issue alone should not be the determining factor.
Amber, I thank you for your call. I will have to disagree on the issue of voting. When I call myself a one-issue voter, I don't mean that all I consider is their stance on life or choice, but it is my first consideration. And a consistent pro-choice stance can, in a sense, turn the tide for me. Now, if I've got two people who are kind of mushy middle on the life issue, and I'm getting basically kind of the same thing for my money with either one, all the other issues are very important too. But my first consideration will be how they will vote or rule in this case on the issues of life. Now, there's a reason for that. And that is because, number one, it's a constitutionally and fundamental right. If you don't have life, you can't do anything else. You can't pursue happiness. And you can't, what's the other one? Exercise liberty. You got to have life before you do that. So that's a question that has to be answered in my mind first. A child that is not allowed to be born won't go to school. You can have the best education policy in the world. It will not benefit a child who is killed in the womb. A child who is not allowed to be born will never utilize a health care system. You can have the best health care system in the world, but if the child is not permitted to pass the portal of the womb alive, they won't be able to benefit from it. Social Security, you name it, any other issue. Dead babies don't collect Social Security. They don't benefit from a strong military or lower taxes. They got to be alive to do that first. And that's why that issue is of primary importance. But I do understand, and Amber, you're being honest. You're saying, if you're not going to be your one-issue voter, you want all the qualifications to be considered. And I think you're right. They're not being considered here. Cindy's calling from South County. Cindy, welcome to Issues, Etc.
Thanks. I was calling about tithing, about e-tithing. You know, we're called upon to give first fruits. And I would have a real hard, my husband puts the envelope in the basket every Sunday. We only get paid twice a month. So we would only have to really write two checks. But I have a hard time not writing a check on Sunday morning.
Why is that?
Because God gives me a lot. I'm really grateful for that, and I want to give, what I give back, I don't think compares at all with what he's given me.
So it sounds like, Cindy, what you're saying here is that the issue of offerings is not simply a cold transfer of funds from you to the church. There's something going on here that really is at work. Irrespective of the amount you write or whether or not you put your hand in the plate or whether or not you have them pull it out of the bank, and you don't want to be deprived of that.
Exactly, and I don't think that anyone should be. And, I mean, I guess people, you know, there are people that are kind of cut and dried folks and want methodical, you know, there's a method to everything that they do. And I'm not, you know, I'm not particularly like that. And I think it's a heart issue. You know, for me, it's kind of a heart issue, and my emotions are tied up with it. And I don't think that that's wrong.
Cindy, thank you. I appreciate that sentiment. That's something I hadn't, well, I had considered, but I hadn't been able to articulate it that way until your call. Thank you very much. The phone numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. I mean, no one would want to say that Christian giving is merely a matter of moving numbers from one column to another. But it could it become this? I don't care if my cable bill is a matter. I have nothing vested. There is no other than being a good citizen. There's no spiritual reason I'm paying my cable bill. The gas bill, for heaven's sakes, if I could find a way of if I could find a way for them to take it away without me knowing it, I'd probably sleep better at night, because that thing, when that thing comes, with very few exceptions, my eyes bug out of my head. I don't get a lot of pleasure out of it. Maybe if it were all electronic, and that's how they're selling the electronic billing to everybody, isn't it? You don't worry about it. You forget about it. Just make sure you got all your forms filled out. Do you want Christian giving to be removed from your consciousness? Just something that you took care of at the beginning of the year. And from that point on, every week, don't even show me the offering plate. Bank's taking care of it. Mark is calling from South County. Mark, thank you for waiting, and welcome to Issues, Etc.
Hi, Pastor Wilkin. This is Mark Sable.
Hey.
I'm not exactly if I'm right in line with the topic of what you were talking about, but I just had heard the other caller talking about like a one-issue voter. I'd say I've become more of a one-issue voter. Maybe I'm thinking a little bit like what you're saying. I feel like my number one issue really is, are they a Christian or not? And then right in line with that is pro-life, because I have a way of looking at it like this. If I'm looking at a candidate and they can't be responsible with a child's life or with a human life, how responsible would you expect them to be with anything else smaller?
That's a great question. Thank you. That's just a marvelous way of looking at it.
That is the way I've come to look at it. I mean, to me, well, I guess if I was thinking, if there were 20 issues, two candidates were debating against one another, and you said one of them was life and one of them was gambling and one of them was, and if you were to put them in, I guess, Christian or moral values, which one would you rank number one? I think most of us would have to say life would probably rank up above education and retirement and Social Security and gambling. And then if they can't do my number one, I don't know really where I can count on them to do 2 through 20.
Mark, thank you for the call. This is interesting. He's made a case for being a single-issue voter. I will take exception on this point, though. And this is probably just going to make people spin. For some reason, it does. I don't know why. But I don't ask the question of whether or not they're a Christian. The guy can be a Muslim, a Hindu. He could practice Zoroastrianism for all I care. If he will protect the unborn with his votes, then he's got a very good chance of getting my vote. You know, he could be a guy who goes out and hugs trees. Now, all other things considered, if he's pro-life, will I vote for the Christian versus the Druid if they're both pro-life? I don't know. Probably. Then I'll start looking at other issues. I think we've got politicians filling the halls of state houses and federal houses who claim to be Christians. And it doesn't do us a lot of good. Half of them are pro-choice. If they're like Dick Gephardt, he has rationalized his pro-choice record on the basis of his Christian faith. That doesn't mean he's done it properly. It's a house of cards. But he has. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. John is calling from McCook, Nebraska, listening on our sister station, KNGN, up there. John, thank you for waiting, and welcome to Issues Etc. John, you there?
Hello?
John, welcome to the program.
Sorry about that.
That's
all right. Thank you for taking my call.
No problem.
My point on the filibustering is that it is unprecedented, and I think it's kind of below-the-belt politics. However, if the Democrats follow through on this threat and do go through on with the filibuster, they've kind of set a precedent that I think we could follow, and if they set the tone, that is a tone that should be picked up on other issues.
Would you be comfortable if, let's say, things were different right now, and this were a pro-choice president nominating a pro-choice judge to the second highest court in the land, would you be comfortable with the pro-lifers setting the precedent of a filibuster against that nominee?
I don't think so. The original intent of the vote on judicial nominations was not that they could be accepted or rejected on the basis of ideology.
But I'm having a hard time understanding here, John, because you say if the Democrats do this and set the precedent, then you think we could utilize that precedent to are you saying that we could then filibuster? In other words, we wouldn't start it, but if they started it, then we'd be justified in doing it back?
Basically, yeah, because what's going to happen is if they do the filibuster, we're going to have 60 votes to stop it. And that's basically going to set the precedent. The precedent right now is 51 votes for a judicial nomination. However, once we go through with that 60 vote, it's basically going to set the precedent that in the future, all judicial nominations are going to require 60 votes.
Well, you know, one might argue, and thank you for the call, John, one might argue that they always have. There has always been the possibility of a filibuster. It may never have been threatened, but there's always the possibility in the Senate of a filibuster. So potentially, it's the same thing with a veto. Why do they count votes and say we've got to have 61 votes, or 63 votes, I think it is, when they pass a bill? Because they say, well, whether or not the president has threatened a veto, we got to have a veto-proof majority. See, the potential has always been there. Look, I will politely disagree here. I don't think we can justify a filibuster against a pro-choice candidate based on the fact that the Democrats did it first against a pro-life candidate. That doesn't, if it's wrong for them to do it, it would be wrong for us to follow up and do it too. This is really rather simple. I don't think it's wrong for them to do it. I expect them to do it. This is what American politics is made of. This is why these rules were put in place and have been retained to this point. If anything, it should tell us, the voters, that we better get a bigger majority of pro-life senators up there and not be happy with a bunch of mishy-mashy middle-of-the-road guys who are willing to fall in and rob us of a candidate because a filibuster is threatened. I don't know what kind of political cost they're going to pay for it. Maybe they won't pay anything at all. Maybe they'll set a precedent. They will rue the day they did this because we will do it again. That doesn't, if it's not right for them to do it now, it's not right for us to do it in the second place. I think in the world of politics where we are dealing with the art of the possible, what we need to do is play by those rules. I'm not talking about bending any ethical or moral standards, never. But the Senate rules say there can be a filibuster, and I would expect a pro-life senator to try his hardest, he may not succeed, but to try his hardest to block a nomination if the shoe were on the other foot. That's politics. That's the way it works. Nothing dirty about this at this point. I disagree with the president. I seldom do, but I disagree with the president. This is somehow shameful politics. This is just politics. The fact of the matter is, maybe all politics is shameful. This just seems especially shameful. And if they end up blocking it, that will not justify a filibuster. We won't need a filibuster the other time around when the shoe is on the other. We won't need justification for it. It's the way things are done. I would expect them to fight tooth and nail, and just as hard as the other side, to see to it that we have pro-life judges. Tooth and nail, all the way up to the filibuster. E-tithing. Oh, my goodness, with 30 seconds. I don't know. I think Cindy made a great point. I think there's more at work in Christian giving than merely moving numbers from one column to another. An electronic transfer of funds. Can it be done? Of course. Scripture doesn't bind us in any way. But what are the possibilities? What will we be saying about Christian giving or teaching people about Christian giving if we do it? This makes the point that what we practice is never divorced from what we believe. Before we jump headlong into e-tithing, let's get straight what we believe about Christian giving, the why and the wherefore of Christian giving. It's one of those things you might have to contend with. We're trying to warn you in our Issues Etc. Book of the Month that there are all sorts of new practices being recommended to the church. Sometimes uncritically accepted by churches because, well, the big church down the road's doing it. E-tithing, if they're doing it, and look at how much money they have, we should do it too. This kind of unexamined leapfrogging Simon Says behavior that churches engage in just because the big church says or does, well, we do too. It goes to one of the very core principles of the church growth movement. That is, the church is here to change a losing strategy. If giving is down, let's find a new way of giving. But we need to consider what these new things will teach. E-tithing about giving and any other change that takes place in the church, what will it be teaching? If you would like to examine the claims of church growth for yourself, there's a book I will recommend. It's the Issues Etc. Book of the Month. It's called Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can order it online at issuesetc.org. That's our website. When you get there, click on the What's New section, and you're going to find information on how to order this new book, Testing the Claims of Church Growth. You can also call Concordia Publishing House tomorrow. They've turned off the lights there and locked the doors, but tomorrow they'll be open for business at 1-800-325-3040. That's 1-800-325-3040. A great resource for examining the claims of church growth. Tomorrow on the program, 7 things you should know about UFOs. Pastor Bobby Brewer of Scottsdale Bible Church in Arizona will be our guest. And we'll talk about this week's cover story of Time Magazine, Solving the Mysteries of DNA and Genetic Science with Dr. Bob Weiss of Concordia Seminary. That's tomorrow on the program. I'm Todd Wilkin. Thanks for listening.
Listen weekday afternoons to Issues Etc. Issues Etc. is a listener-supported program. Your financial support is critical for Issues Etc. to continue. Our address is Post Office Box 9360, St. Louis, Missouri 63117. Or you can contact us via our website at www.issuesetc.org. That's www.issuesetc.org. For a cassette copy of the program, call 1-800-737-0172. That's 1-800-737-0172. Opinions expressed are not necessarily those of this station or the Jubilee Network. Issues Etc. is a broadcast service of the Lutheran Church, Missouri Synod.